Welcome to this interview. I'm Megan Gibson, your conference co-host. Today, I'm speaking with Heather Monroe, a psychotherapist and wellness educator with over 15 years of experience working with trauma. She specializes in the healing of attachment and relational trauma and guides her clients through a holistic and transformative process. Her approach is creative, open, and flexible, recognizing that healing requires an individualized approach. Heather Monroe, thank you so much for being with us today.
I'm so excited to be here again.
So Heather, everyone, including stay-at-home parents, has a relationship to work. Some of us get paid for our labor and others don't, but make no mistake, we're all working in some way. So with kind of that context to set us up, what is attachment and how does it relate to our work?
Well, I love this subject, first of all, because so many conversations with my clients stem around work, right? Because that is where we spend most of our time, unfortunately, in our adult lives. And there is this like theory that we all have around, I think culturally, like you leave your stuff at home when you come to work. And as social beings that are hardwired for connection, that isn't how it works with attachment theory. We take all of our attachment stuff with us to work and all of our other kind of neuroses and, you know, things, mental health stuff, we take it to our workplace. So the way that attachment looks in the workplace is, you know, attachment theory is about how we connect to the social world, how we connect to others. And so we are going to take that attachment theory into work as well. How do we connect to our coworkers? And how do we connect to our business partners? And how do we connect to our leaders, our bosses at work as well?
So true. And in fact, I literally was just having a conversation with my husband because they had their they had an office party last night. And he was like, I was totally having to like process through somebody's attention stuff with them, surprisingly, because when I told them I would meet them in the front of the building, they were like, I felt totally abandoned. And I was like, oh my God, you really were like working. He was like, I didn't know I was going to deal with that today. Right. So it's true. Like we do things, we have interactions with people. And if we don't kind of speak the language or have the knowledge or have the background running, it can be really surprising when people do show up fully and disclose what's hard for them or behave in ways that are indicative of their attachment stuff that we're not aware of. Like, I just imagine all these people kind of without all of this framework bumping into each other all day long, not understanding what all these interactions, what's at the core of all of them.
Oh my gosh, 100%. And we might look at coworkers as, you know, annoying to work with or infuriating to work with. But when we, you know, a lot of that is kind of our layman's terms for attachment things, styles, triggers that are going on without us having the language for why is it infuriating? Like, why is that person annoying? And then a lot of the time when I dig a little deeper with clients, it's like, oh, because this person is highly insecure and constantly asking for if their work is okay. And you're their supervisor. And it's like, oh my gosh, get away from me. Can't you just do work on your own? Well, no, they can't because their attachment, you know, their anxious attachment is being constantly triggered by the work and the interpersonal relationships themselves in the workplace.
I love that you just put that into context too, of like, here's how it's going to feel when you're having it or when you're running into it. Because that's really, you know, we can talk about the theory all we want, but like, how does it actually look at work? And you just did such a great job of describing that. And when you were like, this person's driving me nuts, like I related to so many of them, and not necessarily this job. At this job, everyone is perfect. I love everyone.
But it does. Attached. It's wonderful.
Our whole organization is completely healed and securely attached. But it does remind me of one of our production managers who I absolutely adore and can't live without. And she had this revelation several months ago where she said, you know, I have a way of doing things. And I just assumed everyone did them that way too. And she was having all this conflict because not everyone does everything the way that she does. That's not how their workflow works.
Yeah. Or like someone might be difficult to work with because they always they don't coalesce with the group. And meaning that when there's a group project, they just want to work by themselves and they're nonconformist. And they think like that the group doesn't matter, isn't important. It's like, well, that person might have avoidant attachment, and that's why they're difficult, because it's very hard for avoidant attachment to work well with others.
Yeah. And I think especially, and you let me know what's going on, what you're seeing at work. Post COVID, the idea that like our workplace is a family and we're all a family, like everybody's kind of like distanced themselves from that mentality. Work is very much like, here is where I come to work, and we're less intertwined. Our identities are less intertwined in our work, in our work environment, and the people that we work with, from my like 30,000 foot view. And with that comes some of these behaviors that we're talking about, where like, we're not going to work as hard to overcome our avoidance to work in a group project well, because we don't want to think of our work as our family anymore.
Oh, that's interesting. And we're much more siloed because of COVID. It siloed us a lot more, which might be great for someone who's avoidant. It might have been hell and nervous breakdown producing for someone who has a highly anxious attachment system. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Anxious and maybe extroverted. Like, oh, those poor folks during lockdowns. That was just, I was always checking on my extroverts.
Shout out to all the extroverted people, you poor things. I was thriving as an introvert.
Me too. I was having a great time.
Living my best life, but my extroverted friends were really suffering. Yeah, it's true.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So when you're working with clients on attachment, do they typically come to you with romantic, familial, or work issues first?
Always romantic first. And there's a real reason. There's actually, it makes a lot of sense why, because we're hardwired to procreate. And even if that's not our goal, like we don't want kids, that primary connection is what has kept us surviving all these years, and evolving as a human species. So the first issue that people come with me for is romantic partnership. Either they continue to have the same, usually they continue to have the same romantic issues. Finding the same person just looks different. And that is kind of what we talked about in the last conference, of just why that is. Why do we keep cycling through the same kind of toxic dynamic, which is really just an insecure attachment style? Then if that dissipates, and I will say anxiously attached people tend to focus more on the romantic relationship. My clients with avoidant attachment actually tend to focus more on their work relationships, which makes a lot of sense, because it's not their, you know, love and intimacy, it isn't necessarily like their primary focus, but work might be. And they're showing up at work with some real issues around personalities at work, but also the work itself. More, you know, I can go through what anxious attachment looks like at work and what negative attachment looks like at work, and why that kind of is that avoidance for work stuff.
Yeah, I would love to actually, let's just go into it right now. Yeah. What is avoidant attachment look like at work? What does anxious attachment look like at work specifically? And you already named a couple of ways, but especially since that's what normally brings avoidance in, I would love if we start there.
Yeah. So just a quick kind of review with avoidant attachment for people tuning in and are like, what is attachment? What is that? So avoidant attachment comes when caretakers, when you were younger, almost never were attuned to your emotional or physical needs. And what emotional misattunement looks like is denying your reality. Like, I didn't just yell at you. What are you talking about? When they clearly just yelled, you ask for something and it's like, no, you don't want that. What are you talking about? You don't think that. So there's a constant like denial of reality. It can also look like when you're upset about something, that caretaker cannot process it with you. So they either deny that you're upset about it, or they become so dysregulated by you being upset that they can't calm your body down. Because we're always looking to co-regulate as humans, to co-regulate with another nervous system. So if your caregiver isn't equipped to help you co-regulate, you're going to give up on co-regulation altogether. And what happens is you're going to stunt your emotional regulation skills and go into numbness so that you don't really know what you're feeling in order to survive, right? I don't know what my needs are. I don't know what my wants are. I'm highly independent. I'm highly nonconformist. I'm an island unto myself. I am anti-dependent, like interdependence is weakness. So an avoidant person avoids emotions and is aloof in relationships, is avoidant of interpersonal connection in general. So with that being said, which is a huge mouthful, if you look at that in the workplace, I'm going to do the cons and the pros, because there are cons and pros for each style of attachment. So some of the cons for avoidantly attached, how they show up in the workplace, are that they seek less support from others, which means that they tend to, if they need that support in work in order to get results and in order to provide overall results, they're not going to results. They're not going to look for it, and they're going to be highly defensive in their work not showing the results that are needed. So they don't take blame or criticism well. They are very much like, well, that was the fault of someone else's, or this is why that happened, because they don't seek support. They don't know how to seek support. Like I said before, they don't conform to groups well. So if there's a new time change, like, hey guys, I know COVID happened, but we're, you know, getting back into the office and I need everyone here by 10 o'clock. Your avoidantly attached person might just keep strolling in around 10:30 with like a real sense of disregard that this is what the group is doing. That's like an example of like being nonconformist. Or you have a group meeting and you all have your certain tasks, and like the avoidant kind of goes rogue and just does their own thing. And it's like, hold on, this isn't what we spoke about. They can also have like glazed looks in their eyes during meetings because they're just focusing on what their task is. They're not focusing on the group's overall result. They're focusing on what their result is. And that's a survival mechanism. They have to be focused on what their results are, because when they were little, that was the only way they survived, was like, okay, I know that primary caregivers aren't going to save me, so I need to save myself. So I'm going to become super focused on the tasks that I have to do. They have distrust towards coworkers' intentions as well as leaders' intentions. So they tend to be distrustful, more negative emotions than positive emotions in general, like a little bit jaded, distrustful, suspicious. They have negative views of their leaders a lot of the time. Like, I could do that better. That's not right. Like, this is because, again, they can't see how a leader might be concentrating on the group as a whole. And that doesn't really make sense to them a lot of the time as an employee. They are distant, so they'll make up work excuses to not socialize. They're not really gonna, you know, be going out to lunch, or they might be, but as soon as it gets too personal, you're going to see them pull away, you know? So they might be great as like extroverted and social, but like, as soon as it gets too deep or like too personal, they're going to go away a little bit and put you at an arm's length. So they like their anonymity. They avoid personal closeness, and they avoid group tasks. They're just not great at teamwork. So, that's kind of like the negatives of the avoidant attachment style. Any questions about that? Or
no, but I'm resonating with every single thing that you're saying, and not at all thinking of people that I work with, and how this explains their behavior. And also, I was thinking about something else too, but now I was listening so intently that I, and normally I make little notes while you're while you're talking so that I don't forget, but now I can't remember.
It's okay.
But I can also see how like the hyper focus even on like their job and their goals and their work is advantageous to them. It might be a con like to the system that they're in, yeah. And it ends up having other people feel like, you know, as the anxious people, not the secure people, feeling like they don't like them or that they're just not, you know, interested in them, when really it's just like, I'm just focused over here. I'm getting my stuff done.
Yes. And as leaders, they aren't sensitive to their employees' needs. And there's a lot of research that shows that a good leader, an overall well-rounded leader, is sensitive to the needs of the group. It doesn't mean that they'll always go with what everyone needs, because that wouldn't be a good leader. They take in what the group is saying, and then they make a decision for the better of what they think is going to be best for the group. Avoidant leader they're not going to be able to take in the needs of the group. They're really thinking about the company, and they're not realizing that the company is built on people. So people, when they have avoidant bosses, feel really distant from them. They feel not appreciated by them very much. And it can lead to high turnover with employees, because it's like, I don't know what the head of the snake is doing, what it thinks about me or my performance. I don't get any feedback. And I feel underappreciated at work. So yeah. That's kind of the feel of employees around avoidant leaders.
And I didn't mean to interrupt you, but it's so fitting to me too, because I'm thinking of like sales jobs where people are really, really good at sales, and where it's an independent job, they go out, they land a sale, right? And then those people, the successful salespeople, are then promoted to managers, where they are now in charge of people, when that's not what they excel at. That's not, that doesn't make them necessarily good at sales. I'm sure lots of salespeople are great managers, but the ones that aren't, it sounds textbook, like this is what's going on, right?
Yes.
And then the other thing I wanted to ask while we're here, sorry, what were you going to say?
No, I was just thinking about siloed, like tech people could be very good at being have an avoidant attachment style and be great at that, because they're given a task to program something. It works in a silo, no one else. Their work is being graded just on them alone. So it could do very well in certain companies as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I also want to at some point touch on, and this might not be it, you might want to come to it later and we can put a pin in it, but things like panic disorder at work, and things like panic attacks, and things where you are having to perform, but you can be extraordinarily good in a lot of situations. And then a weird, like something will come up where you have to like go on a bus for a group trip, or you're asked to speak in front of a bunch of people, and how you might respond from those different types of attachment given like higher pressure situations at work.
Yes. And that's, so I think I spoke about this in the last talk, how if you put a avoidantly attached person through a divorce or a death, they become anxiously attached. Like their attachment can flip. And so high stress situations can create a flip of the attachment style. So that is a great point, is like, given higher stress situations for an avoidantly attached person, they are absolutely capable of having panic attacks at work, whether it's like you have to go to a conference and socialize with everyone and go to all these dinners, and avoidant person may be like, oh my God, this is literally my living hell. Like, I'm not capable of this and I have to perform. So it's a great point. And our attachment styles can flip under high stress.
Great. Okay. So now that we've talked about the cons, what are the pros of avoidant attachment at work?
So pros would be kind of like if you flip the cons, right? So you're going to be, you're going to have an ability to have sustained focus on a task a lot more than an anxiously attached person is, because you don't care what anyone else is doing or thinking. It's like you are just zeroed in on what the task at hand is. And so you tend to get the job done. Like you tend to be very efficient at getting the job done. You work independently, and that's that's a great thing that there's a great side to that, to not have to like go to your supervisor all the time to have your work checked, and you have a real security around your skills. So that can be a great thing about working independently. You tend to like you orient at work around promoting results. So like your focus at work isn't interpersonal, like an anxiously attached person's is. Your focus at work is promoting results, and you're going to be the quickest person to respond effectively in a crisis situation. And all of this is backed by research. There's research now being studied about attachment theories in work. So everything I'm naming is pretty well documented and science backed around like effectively responding to crisis, all of those kind of things, which I think is very interesting because when we spoke about relationships with avoidantly attached people, they respond well to intensity. Like that is what tends to glue the anxious and the avoidant together at first, is like mistaking intensity for intimacy. And so that makes sense to me that at work, they're going to be a really quick responder and effective responder to intensity, to crisis. Yeah. So
And
those are
yeah,
the pros.
bridging on that, Zoom is weird. I apologize for the interruptions. The occupations like first responders, right? I've got several EMTs and firefighters in the conference for the first time. I've been trying to get those folks in,
Very
and
cool.
all of the same things, right? Like the intensity factor and having incredible calm and chaos in emergency situations, and also just like the personality profile of people that go into those lines of work is very normally, I'm overgeneralizing, very avoidant sometimes.
100%, like to have that calm and that almost numbing towards a crisis in order to like really focus on what needs to be done is essential, and it promotes it does well with avoidant attachments. Doesn't
Absolutely.
mean that, yeah, I actually want to make this this statement that this talk isn't meant to go and diagnose like any of your coworkers. It's just about like how people might be oper where people might be operating from until they take an attachment, like, you know, test and all that stuff. It's, but I would say that we're all on the spectrum. And I am going to talk about when our attachment systems are triggered because we all have attachment systems. So, you know, our anxious, like if we veer on the side of anxious attachment or we veer on the side of avoidant, we might be seeing more of the anxiously attached qualities in ourselves. Doesn't mean we have anxious attachment. It just means that we're on the spectrum of that side.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you said that because the last thing that you should do, you know, you've got your coworkers and you go in and you're like, you're making my life a problem because you're so avoidantly attached, and I think you need to go see a therapist and fix that so that I'm more comfortable, right? Like that's the last thing we need people doing. It's just a mode of understanding both yourself and the obstacles you might be facing or the feedback you're getting that you feel powerless to change, or the people that you're interacting with. You know, creating a little compassion around kind of their orientation and the things that you can do to kind of maneuver around their center of gravity, if you will.
Right, exactly. And some workspaces are more triggering attachment system-wise than other workspaces. And so that's kind of interesting as well. I worked with a client who had a lot of anxious attachment that was compiled, like made worse with the fact that she was in a job that she didn't, that she wasn't just passionate about. Like it had a lot of math and like stuff that her brain just can't process well. And so it made her extra anxiously attached because things just didn't stick. It didn't make sense to her. So it wasn't the best fit just with her brain. And also on top of that, she struggled with anxious attachment. Whereas if she was in a job that, you know, was more humanitarian, her anxious attachment wouldn't be so inflated, you know? Because there would be some stability in the work she was doing.
It's interesting too, because just situationally, I'm a person who is riding an edge of growth around change I did not initiate. And as you were describing avoidant behaviors, I was like, I don't relate to a lot of that, except for when I am when change is thrust upon me without me being the initiator of the change. I was like, all of that sounds like what I do. Somebody changes things, and I'm like, I'm a skeptic. I'm gonna rebel. I'm gonna just do whatever I want anyway, right? Like outing myself. But just to give people an example of you might not be relating to the description of where you land on the attachment scale, but then in certain situations, under certain stressors, under, you know, things that aren't in your control, that's when this stuff kind of pops up and you're like, oh.
Exactly. So going to anxious attachment, I'll give a good example of like when our anxious attachment system has been triggered and what that can look like, even though we aren't necessarily anxiously attached in our romantic relationship per se. So anxiously attached, we are going to have, you know, our caretakers almost never got it. Like they got it right sometimes, but most of the time they didn't, which always left us guessing when our needs were going to be met in the most simple terms. So if we're always guessing as a child, is mom or dad or grandma or whoever our primary caretaker, are they going to meet my needs this time, or is my reality going to be denied? Am I going to be dismissed, or is their system going to be so dysregulated they can't regulate mine? That just talking about it gives a lot of anxiety. It's like, so I'm going to be hypervigilant around connection, and my self-esteem, my self-worth is going to be highly dependent on whether, my self-esteem or self-worth is going to be highly dependent upon that connection. But since that connection was so fickle, that means my self-esteem is not going to be solid. So I'm going to have lower self-esteem. I'm going to have higher insecurities, a lot of worry, a lot of self-doubt. And these are all going to show up at work. I'm constantly going to be seeking approval from colleagues, from supervisors, and from bosses. It's going to be very hard for me to know that I did a good job without someone telling me I did a good job. I'm going to have a hard time working on my own because I don't have a lot of confidence in myself to work on my own or to work by myself. I'm going to have a strong fear of rejection. And that means when I have a strong fear of rejection, it means I'm always going to be looking at the holes, like poking holes in looking for disconnection in some way. So even something that isn't a rejection, like at a review, you're doing such a great job. You're one of our hardest workers. You're so like you conform to the group. You do such a great job. And here's something I'd like you to work on. All I hear is the "and." Oh my gosh, I'm going to get fired. My job, I'm not worth anything. Everything else is thrown out the window. There's like always looking for the holes in where I can be abandoned, right? So, strong fear of connection, conform to the group, but almost like can almost be to a fault where I lose myself in the group. So we have a group meeting and it's kind of like, okay, what the group's going to do. And then what am I going to do individually within the group? And I can have, that can give me a lot of anxiety about like, I'm the weakest link though. And if this is the group's goal and I need to do this thing by myself, oh my gosh, if I mess up, that's going to mess the whole group up. And then you're preoccupied and then you need people to self-soothe you, you know, to soothe you, and you need to co-regulate. And then people are taking up time just like regulating your nervous system instead of getting the work done. So it can look like a lot of like interpersonal drama and exhaustion. Like people can feel a little exhausted as coworkers by needing to reassure you. Overwhelming longing and desire for closeness in the co-working space. So I need to have a work wife. I need to have like a best working buddy. I need to be padded with friendships all around me to buoy me up, to kind of compensate for the fact that I feel like I'm drowning by myself, if that makes sense. And there's interestingly, well, higher burnout levels, which is understandable because you're expending so much energy in the interpersonal systems and drama in your own mind and system. And there's interestingly like negative expectations of leaders. And that makes sense when you think about it, because you're always looking that someone's going to abandon you. And you're transferring your caregiver, right, experiences into your leadership experiences. So a boss for an anxiously attached person is going to mean danger in a certain way. It's like, I don't trust that this person is going to listen to me, show up for me, and be attuned to my needs. And the moment I sense that they aren't, it's like, aha, see, I told you. Like they're an awful boss. So they tend to have negative views of leadership.
Ooh,
for different reasons
that.
Than the avoidant.
Yeah, right. Because both of them have negative views of leadership. Poor leadership. Getting a bad rap. But for totally different reasons. Yeah. Interesting. And I'm imagining, you know, you're a manager and you give somebody a review, like you said, that yearly review, there's a growth spot, right? Like here's where you could grow a little. That's all they're thinking about. And as the leader, you're like, I gave them a great review. I'll see you next year. Right. And they're like, I need just like constant check-ins.
They're
like
doing, and they're still in that room a month later, still thinking about all the, you know, the,
I was just going to ask, I'm like, and they're the ones that lay in bed at night, replaying conversations that they had, whether they be about work or not. Right. Like these could be like water cooler conversations. I'm like, oh my God, I looked so stupid when I said that blah, blah, blah.
Yes, 100%, because they're hypervigilant and highly anxious around interpersonal relationships. So, oh my gosh, I can't believe I said that. I wonder if that person's mad at me for some reason. They weren't like looking, interacting with me a lot today. Again, high burnout, you're expending a lot of energy outside of work thinking about these things.
Yeah. And also like always fearing being fired, right? Like the slightest mistake, the slightest misunderstanding or miscommunication, you're like, oh, that's it. Here I go.
Yep, exactly. So these can, the pros of anxiously attached is some of the negatives too. Like they're not going to be troublemakers. We are going to coalesce, conform, like just tell us what to do and we will do it. So we're not going to be troublemakers. We're not going to be nonconformists. We're better at detecting risks because we're hypervigilant around risks, and like pitfalls and downfalls. So we're really good at like poking, like being able to see, oh, I don't know if this is going to work. I don't know if this system needs some tweaking in, you know, at the company. And like, that's really great. Everyone needs someone like that to be able to kind of like sit around and look at the negatives and where improvement can be made.
They should be assigned to risk management.
Yes, exactly. HR, just doing it. Yes,
exactly.
Because we are self-reflective, almost too self-reflective, we're always seeking ways to improve our performance. So during the review, when someone says, and these are the ways you can improve, you better believe that we are going to be on it. And like, do you see, you know, and also, but also looking for reassurance around that. Like, do you think that I've improved this way? Like, did you see how I did that yesterday? I'm actually trying to do what you said. So I'm going to ask more questions, like, you know, and then it becomes like, okay, like I want you to take that and internalize all that conversation and just improve. You don't need to take
this is an inside work, not a collaborative thing.
This is the internal monologue. It doesn't have to be an external.
This is not a group project. Yeah, exactly.
So, but we will be looking for ways to improve. And we are high performers at work because we're very scared of getting fired or rejected. So we are going to be, you know, grade A for effort, like A for effort, just attachment. We're always going to be looking to be high performers and get those compliments and praise from our coworkers and our supervisors.
Do you find that anxiously attached workers have a harder time with work-life boundaries, or are both equally guilty of overworking and having too much permeability there?
No, that's a great question. Anxiously attached people have much harder time with interpersonal boundaries at work, like much harder time with that. And avoidantly attached people have, can be boundaryless in a different way. Like they can be, they would have no problem going through a coworker's stuff, like being uncontained around privacy of others. So I always look at boundaries as like protecting myself from the world, but also protecting the world from me. And avoidantly attached people tend to be more uncontained. They have more of a problem protecting the world from themselves. And anxiously attached people have more of a problem protecting themselves from the outside world. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Like other people's thoughts and ideas and feelings penetrate their boundary as an anxiously attached person. And as a avoidantly attached person, I am not careful with my words and thoughts and physical boundaries with other people.
So how do you, I mean, obviously I think we touched on it before, but you know, most of the people that find their way into your office are dealing with romantic problems, not necessarily work problems. Their boss didn't say, you know, you should go see an attachment expert, but I do wish that that would happen more at work. So when they're coming in, how do they integrate this type of work towards secure attachment then into their work life? Does it happen naturally, or do you find that people have to also like go, oh, right, I can also work on this in this separate place?
Well, I'll give you an example. I was working with a client who is recovering from anxious attachment. She was able to be in a securely attached relationship. And so that anxious attachment in the securely attached romantic relationship has really been healing, and she's been doing so well with that. In business, someone who wants to be her business partner. She was telling me about the dynamic, and I'm thinking to myself, this sounds toxic. Like, this sounds like all of a sudden she's questioning herself. She's questioning if she's right. She feels very convinced by this person. Every time she leaves a conversation, this person wants more power in the company. They want more money. They want more equity. She's not comfortable giving it to the person, but every time, you know, just all these things. And so a lot of our talks were around, this isn't a romantic insecure relationship, but it is mimicking, right? An anxiously attached, you are becoming anxiously attached in this relationship. And so you have the choice to now leave and say, you know what, I'm going to look elsewhere for a business partner, or stay knowing that this will continue to happen and you may lose more and more agency and power within the working relationship. So like, that's a great representation of how attachment gets healed in one sector, or is healing in one sector, and yet it gets beat up in another sector, or like comes to fruition. And remember how I said in the last talk, I had said that attachment styles are malleable. They can change. They can become secure, earned secure attachment, but they can also become insecure. And so a securely attached person can go into a relationship, and if they stay long enough with all the red flags that are telling them to leave, if they stay long enough, they could become insecurely attached. And so it's the same decision in a work relationship. If you're intimately involved, like a business partner, it's like you want to look at who you're getting married to very closely. And if there show, if it shows that there's a toxic dynamic between the two of you, do not sign the papers. Do not pass go, because it's going to turn into that insecure attachment style dance.
And it's interesting because we actually have less time to date an employer than we do to date our spouses. And so it's really hard. Like, how do we both as employers and employees vet our workplaces and our work people for these types of things and try to like suss out how somebody's going to fit into culture?
Well, and I also think what I work with clients is, so anxiously attached people, we tend to have a theory of lack. Like, I have to make this person love me because this is the only person that's going to love me because I'm so unlovable and unworthy. That's also going to come into a job, meaning, well, I have to work for this person who's abusive towards me because I'll never find another job that'll pay me this much. I'll never find another job that has these benefits. And it's scarier because we are talking about money here. We're talking about financial security. And so it's harder for people to take that jump and say, I'm going to look for another job. Like, or, you know, while I'm in this job, I'm going to look for another job because the financial insecurity is so great in a job and workspace.
Yeah, absolutely. And we, you know, we can talk about how it feels to be in a work environment, all of these things that that people, when they're listening to us, can say like, oh, that doesn't sound that like that big of a deal. But when we're talking about the actual security of your life, your ability to take care of your health and eat good food and have a roof over your head and provide for the people that you love, those are deep needs, like primary needs, not small things. And so it's one thing to insecure attachment, especially if you're in your career at all, if you've been working for a while, you're like, I know things. I know I can pivot in the world. I know I have capability and that I'll find the right place and believe in that. It's another thing to not have that and to just be like, I'm not going to risk the what I know, even if it's awful and a terrible fit, it makes me hate myself. Yeah. I'm not going to risk the terrible I know for the potential of something better. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. And I've also noticed that people get in the same cycles as they do in a romantic relationship. They keep finding bosses that are just awful, like to them, and they keep staying for too long and then leaving, but then finding the next boss that is the same thing. You know, the same pattern. I know that we're running low on time, and I wanted to talk a little bit about the healing.
Yes, please.
Of these things. So good news is, like I said, our attachment styles are changeable, very changeable. And with anxious, let's just start with anxious. If you identify yourself as having an anxious attachment style, you're going to be doing a lot of individual work around cognitive behavioral therapy type work, like reframing thoughts. Like, I can't do this. This is terrible work. I need someone to help me with this, and start reframing those thoughts of, I have the inner resources, right, to do as much as I can without the help of somebody. And to really, if you ask for help on any given project at least 10 times, what I start working with clients with anxious attachment is, try getting that down, those 10 times down to 5 times. Like, let's do harm reduction. It's all about harm reduction. So nothing too big, not all or nothing, but like, if you ask your coworker, you know, 10 questions an hour, just make it one and try and synthesize everything. A lot of work around evidence, like, where's the evidence that you are, that you do have the resources. Like, let's look for the evidence that your work has never been awful. Your work has always done really well. You've outperformed every time. Maybe, just maybe, you can take a little bit more credit than you're giving yourself for this. So really looking at the belief systems at play and being able to reframe those belief systems. As far as emotional regulation, that is going to be the work of using breath work. And I mean, just learning how to breathe through anxiety with like diaphragm breathing and all those kind of things are really helpful for anxious attachment. And also not going to the lemon trees expecting oranges. Meaning, are you continuously going to the people that are going to not give you what you need. Like you always have to go back to them because sometimes you get what you need, but most of the time you don't. You probably are doing that because that's what's familiar to you. And that's what you were trained to do as a kid with your primary caregivers. So I would say sometimes not even going to a coworker, but going to a friend outside of work and saying, I'm having this like high anxiety around performance, someone who doesn't trigger your attachment system. Like you want to find someone who doesn't trigger your attachment system and then not exhaust them with it. So really learning how to regulate our own nervous system a little better than we're used to. And that just takes a lot of time with working with a therapist and working on different strategies for doing that. Breathing techniques, but also self-talk, also sleep hygiene, like things like that, all these little ways that we can really buffer our resiliency. So those are going to be some of the key takeaways for healing an anxious attachment style at work.
And I love the little baby steps of that, right? Because that's something you can work on incrementally over time. Yes. And then over the course of a year makes a huge difference.
Yeah. And I would also say that one of the first things I do when working with anxious attachment in the workplace is going over with my clients, where does it show up? Like, show me where it shows up. Let's write a list, like write it down where, when your attachment system gets triggered and what are your protest behaviors? Meaning like, what are the things you do to get back to connection with people? And let's look at that list and start trying to abstain a little bit more around the protest behaviors. So if it's asking 1,000 questions, you know, all the time, if it's needing constant reassurance, we're going to try and like draw that back just a tiny bit each week and see what comes up for you. So that's with anxious attachment. Avoidant attachment, it's going to kind of be the opposite. So with avoidantly attached people, I do a lot of internal interoception work, meaning what's going on inside of you? Because anxiously attached people, we know what's going on inside of us. We're very attuned with our overly frazzled nervous system. Avoidantly attached people, we don't, it's like, the wind is blowing. I'm not sure what is happening. There's a little bit of like a void of, I don't know what the feeling is. I'm not great at nuanced feelings. So something that I ask all my clients to do when dealing with attachment is get an app on their phone called, oh my gosh, How We Feel. It was done by, created by Yale researchers researchers at Yale about emotional, it's all about tracking our emotions and it gives us emotional literacy. So I use this a lot with avoidantly attached people where the app asks you to check in. It'll just beep on your phone, like check in, how are you feeling? And it gives you all the different words of how you might be feeling categorized in 4 different sectors, like high energy, uncomfortable, high energy, comfortable, low energy, uncomfortable, low energy, comfortable. And in those sectors, it shows you the word and it describes each feeling. Let's say there's 25 in each sector. And so avoidantly attached people when using this app and then also just checking in with themselves are able to expand their emotional literacy. And then with the expansion of emotional literacy and emotions, they're able to ask for support when needed a little bit more. So expanding emotional literacy is going to be huge for avoidantly attached. Then asking for support, understanding the difference between interdependence and codependence. Like interdependency is a really good thing, right? Codependency, which, you know, is like asking all the time, needing a constant reassurance, that's not a great thing. So teaching them about interdependency and having them bring questions, a lot of avoidance, they just like have questions like, is this interdependence or is this codependence, right? It's like, no, that's interdependence. Like, so understanding the difference between interdependency and what's appropriate and what's not as appropriate is really helpful in them then learning where support is needed and how to ask for it.
I can see that playing out in both anxious and avoidant. The when you start doing the work, needing a little bit of reassurance that you're doing it right. Right. It's interdependence versus dependence. And then for the anxious, was I checking in too much? And you're like, no, you're supposed to check in with people. Right. It's just like how much and the trigger or the initiation, the reason behind the initiation. Yeah. Right. If you need to go check in with a coworker about their stage of development of the project, that's a legitimate check-in. If you just need to ask a question for reassurance that you could have answered yourself. Right. Like we're working. It's like when you start to do the work, it almost creates a little bit more insecurity because it's so unfamiliar and can be uncomfortable. And yeah.
And avoidantly attached people, when they come to me, it's more about, I'm having all these negative experiences at work. I'm in a terrible work environment because of everybody else. And so the work can tend to be about, tends to be more like veering them towards self-reflection. Like how are they contributing to that messiness or that hostileness or, you know, that lack of connection at work? And it's a very gentle guide towards that. Avoidantly attached people, they are harder to change the attachment style with because they tend to be more avoidant in changing it because it was the only way they survived. And they don't, you know, anxiously attached people, they're much more willing to change because they are very self-aware that this is not maintainable. Like, I can't live like this. I am on high drive all the time. This is unsustainable. It feels more sustainable with an avoidantly attached person. It's like everyone else is the issue. I'm just being me, you know? Why is everyone so annoyed when I show up an hour late for work every single day? Like, come on, just like get your stuff done and you'll be fine. Like you can be like me too. It's not the point. And you have to kind of guide them back to what it means to be part of a group, what it means to be interdependent, what connection means. So it's a little trickier, but if they are willing, it's doable. It's always doable if you're willing.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like all those little steps of, I don't need to introspect. I don't need to be self-aware about my actions because my actions don't impact the desired outcome of the company in their assessment. Right. And you're like, but it actually does. It affects group morale. And it affects, like, if we look at empathy, if we try to develop some like perspective on other people's experiences, then but we have to like teach people how to do that. Like,
exactly.
It's
so hard to be empathetic as an avoidantly attached person because you don't have that. You don't know what it is a lot of the time. Cause you've had to shut that down at such a young age.
Yeah, because it wasn't modeled or shown to you, right? No, if somebody's constantly arguing with you about how you feel or what you think or what
you're
doing.
Constantly looking to be right. You need to prove yourself right. You need to prove your reality. So yeah, it's a constant struggle, but doable, for sure doable.
Absolutely. That's what I definitely want to leave people with. It's like, this work is not... it's hard, but it's not hard, right? Like, it will be uncomfortable and it requires focus and it requires practice. And it's a really great idea to get support from somebody like you, Heather, but it's not impossible and it's not complicated, right?
Yeah, it's not complicated. Exactly. It is not complicated. And you are going to consistently have more opportunities every single day to practice and flex the secure muscle. And the more we flex the muscle, the stronger the muscle gets. So it's not going to be for anxiously attached people. It's not going to be, this is the only opportunity I have. No, no, no. You're going to have thousands of opportunities. Believe me, it's going to be fine. And for the avoidantly attached person, I don't have any opportunities. Yes, you do. You have hundreds of opportunities every day to do this. You just need to see what the opportunities are. It's like the opposite issue.
Putting on a new lens on our lives. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, Heather, if somebody's ready to start this work, how do they find out more about you and your work?
Yeah. So the best way to find out about my work is to sign up for my newsletter. It's monroewellness.com and you just subscribe. I'm also on Instagram, Monroe Wellness. And I work out of Nashville. So anyone who is, local in Nashville, I am able to talk about, possible openings or wait lists, but no one outside of the Nashville or Tennessee area.
For in person, right. Awesome. Thank you so much, Heather.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to be here.